of the first day.
All right.
Yeah.
And so you were on as well? Or you got knocked off and he...
No, well, no, I tolerate the first time, but when he came back on, I told him to go fuck himself, and he quit, and he ran off. My theory was that we were playing so much fucking evergreens, he was getting pissed off, so he came in to one up the evergreens.
And you know which one it was? Which ion? Which number?
It seemed to be one or three. The gentle one or the giggly, jokey one, which is three. Huh. It's a soft ion.
Right. Okay.
But then he became mean. Remember that? Someone noticed he kind of got hard at the very end. And so somebody thought he'd switch to another one. Hey, you know when there would be those gaps? That's it. When there was the gap during the chiming, and then there was another gap, that could be when Ion is jumping to another JW. Remember, he'd go quiet? You heard that, Greg, right? He would stop, and he wouldn't be there for a while.
Yeah, and I was going to mention, I think you were right a few when you were mentioning a few months ago to get out of Toronto, because it's like pretty much Toronto's become a joke of the whole national media in the past few weeks with all the stuff that's gone on.
Yeah, like we had Barbara Peters, who lives in San Francisco, and we brought up last night, we brought up Rob Ford. She goes, Rob Ford, who's that? And then afterwards she goes, oh, the fat guy. That's everything been on everybody's TV, so he's just like this fat guy that everybody's seen.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely turned into like the biggest, he's one of the biggest celebrities in the world, or he's like one of the most well-known politicians, I guess, now.
Yeah, so what is it? He can continue being there with no budget and people ignore him? Runs
exactly
the City Hall
about
meetings.
One third of the budget.
What? Yeah but does he still run the City Hall meetings?
No, but he never really did in the beginning because he's always just another guy with the counselors, and then there's like the speaker is the person. That's
oh, okay. So he just sits there, and he's being largely ignored now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, because they all want him to just take a leave of absence.
Right.
A few of them said that it didn't go far enough, you know, because it's just like a leave of absence. You could just.
But see, look, Daniel. This is the power of the TV iconography, the TV body. The fucking city is quaking that their image is being ruined across the TV landscape. It's more dangerous than some, you know, corrupt person, you know, doing something evil in Toronto. This tourism image, this joke, this is traumatic. This is Android meme trauma. Literally.
Yeah.
It's the TV body trauma. And the stupid little men, the little politicians are all cowering. They say, get the hell out of here. You can't be in the Santa Claus parade. You can't, but get the fuck. You're ruining our city.
Yeah,
they have no sense of old literate independence. Well, who gives a fuck what anybody thinks about our city? Well, this guy's an idiot. We don't have to prove that. Everybody knows he's an idiot. No, they're, oh, no, get off the cameras. You can't be in the Santa Claus parade. He wore a clown suit, Dave said, you know, and covering him up. Like, timid little idiots. I can't wait till I'm fucking famous. I'm going to fucking change the rule. I'm going to out-rob Ford, and I'll be so pure they won't know what to do about it because... You know, I'm not a crackhead. I'm going to be fucking awesome on the other spectrum. I'm going to sit here for 6 weeks and not drink a drink. I'm not going to sleep for six fucking weeks.
Yeah, he's over 3 weeks now. That's what he told Peter Mansbridge. 3 weeks he hasn't drank, yeah.
Right. But I'm talking about I'm not going to sleep for 6 weeks. And I demand...
Yeah.
Total changes, or I will blow up the world.
No drink.
Yeah. But anyway.
Who cut him off guard was, who's the guy? Matt Lauer was like, on the Today Show, and he goes, well, what would have happened if you were in a drunken stupor and there's like a terrorist attack on Toronto? And then Rob Ford is just like, I'm very lucky that has not happened.
Very
lucky. And then he goes, yeah, what would you do? He just like puts it on Matt Lauer. What would he do if he was drunk and something happened to him? And then,
He's a curious personality. He's half oblivious because he when he said I go home and have enough to eat, he probably meant food. Or did he mean cunnilingus? Did he actually mean eating out his wife? Like, it's ambiguous, right? Did he know that what it could have meant? What, does anybody figure that out?
No, I think he did, but then that's the weird part. Yeah, he's got more than enough to eat at home, but he's only got one wife at home. So what's he what's he talking about? And the
more than enough. I don't need to eat any prostitute. I got enough at home.
Yeah.
And like he's very surrealistic. He's now what's the other thing he did? Okay, so the news report the other day that he walked into an elevator, and there was Adam Vaughn, and he immediately turned around and walked out of the elevator. Did you see that report?
Yeah, I believe that. He's turning his back on all the counselors, but that's because they did it to him, I guess.
But his brother is the mafia-looking guy.
Yeah, he's more serious, Doug Ford. But then he's the guy that claims that he doesn't party. He's straight edge. He hasn't drank in there.
But he was a drug dealer when he was a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing, Daniel. They talk about, they hear him mentioned or he's on gangster phone taps, right?
Yeah, exactly. I've been reading all the police documents. They've released hundreds of pages.
Yeah. Do you know who does the gangster phone taps? My fucking foster son, Paul. He's the guy who's in charge of that.
That's very quick, yeah, because I think you almost mentioned that a few months ago. But
right, I don't know if I'm supposed to mention it, but who gives a fuck? And so, you know, Shannon, who ends Who's Forgotten Fur Lint, her twin brother is, an attorney. What do they call him? What are they called in Toronto? The lawyers? Counselors? District attorneys? Or attorney general? Solicitor General, whatever.
The crown attorneys,
and he works in the police. He works in the surveillance of the drug gangs.
That is hardcore, yeah, because they were. This is like a huge operation. Just reading all this, all these documents.
And you're doing? You're reading them? You're reading them?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. I got them all downloaded. It's like it's hundreds of pages. A bunch of them are blacked out, but then you can read between the lines. You can figure out the undercover, how they did the undercover part.
Yeah.
And they also had a part with a plane. They had the Toronto police rented a plane. They just had circling Etobicoke, like trying to follow these guys in the air. And then they start getting complaints from like the neighborhood saying there's like this low flying plane. Keeps on flying around the block. So then they call it off. They're like, it's going to affect the investigation.
Yeah, so you know what my point is, Daniel?
Yeah.
My point is that Rob Ford, he has to go. He had to go by yesterday. He was distracting the media from me.
Mm-hmm.
From this fast or whatever I'm doing. So I got an email on November 22nd. I got an email from someone.
Mm-hmm.
Nelson Thal.
Oh, really? Another one? Huh. He had just,
well, not another one.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah, a few weeks ago. That was him just saying, hey, I don't, you're a disgusting person. But I sent a bunch of emails to his son, but I put the father's address in there by accident. So he got them, and he thought I was being friendly to him, so he sent back a couple of friendly emails because I didn't swear at him.
It's the 22nd, so that was the Kennedy anniversary.
Right. I mean, he's been very involved in that, and we used to do stuff on CKLN. So on November 22nd, it's like all the old arguments were put down for the national holiday of mourning, you know, and everybody forgot their fucking grievances, and everybody was pleasant to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
By accident. It happened by accident. And he goes on, and I read it into the record, he goes on about how touched he was by Mae Brussels and all this stuff. It's all a bunch of bullshit, and I didn't answer him. But we got to read it into the record. So there's a very interesting polarity. It's almost like Carol and I are exiles from Toronto. Toronto's the true government of the solar situation. It's the Switzerland of the solar government, and we're the government in exile.
Yeah.
They took our license away there.
Yeah, exactly. They gave it to NDFM, though, so they still got Broken Social Scene, and they're still playing some, like...
What'd you say? They gave it to who?
awesome. Indie FM has got it. Indie 88, they're called. So it's like indie rock, but that's like, they play like Broken Social Scene. They play like,
Oh, you're talking about, see, I'm not talking about that license. I'm talking about Carolyn's license.
Oh, Carolyn's license. Yeah, yeah.
But she, yeah, we're a government in exile. And, I used to say that I was the government and my people were in exile. I reversed it. I'm okay. I'm at headquarters, but my people are in exile. So our people are in exile, and they're waiting for Carolyn to start marching back into Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. Because there was another one of those health expos, the Whole Life Expo or something. Was this
Total
one?
Life? Yeah, she used to go to them, but Total she didn't life, go to them yeah. anymore. Yeah. They're dinky.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they're just waiting for her. And then, I was going to mention, though, because we mentioned this Kennedy anniversary. Did you see any of the stuff that happened in Dallas? Did Nelson Thal mention anything? Was, like, he in Dallas or anything? Or
Nelson was a kid. He was a little boy. He was 10 years old when that happened.
I mean, just on Friday, because there was, like, a huge, it was, like, sort of like a protest. You know, it looked like a G20 or like a Occupy.
Oh, there was a big, big mass thing around the Dealey Plaza?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they wouldn't let Alex Jones and all the truth people in. So, and then they had like this huge riot force that like forced them out of the air.
Wow.
The plaza.
But see, here's the thing. It's all ridiculous. I'm sitting here playing what's actually happening. And see, this is the ridiculous of the world. I'm presenting the talk and talking. Have you heard any of it? You know, the evergreens are, you're going to hear incredible detail over the next few days of the lining up of the shots and how many heads bounced and all this, how many witnesses died, all these details, and the mass mind is running around being crazy, and Bob's quietly here, the real Pope, you know, it's like Cincinnatus. Wasn't he the general, the Roman general, refused to rule? He just did something in the war. Well, that's what's going on here. We are the noble archetype sitting here presenting the real stuff with incredible humor and the best artists in the world hanging out and absurdities and manifestations and islands showing up. Yeah, look at it. What actually is happening? And you're the only journalist up there that's aware of this.
Exactly. Yeah, I knew I had to tune in. That's where I was like, yeah, getting more info on the Rob Ford. Gave you an update on the JFK.
Yeah, thanks for the article, the newspaper article.
Oh, yeah, you got that one in the mail, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you caught those Superman stamps, too, eh?
Yes. Yeah, so remember, tonight, Neufeld is on this show tonight. You might want to hear that. You could call in and quiz Neufeld.
Yeah, I'm going to see if he knows about Indy 88.
Right.
That would be good.
No, Neufeld, someone was saying, you know, he's very funny, Eliza. Are you there, Eliza?
Yeah, sorry, I was doing something.
Right. Well, Neufeld, you get him going, he knows everything about everybody because he's a gossip, and he has all the gossip on every fucking musician. You name anybody, he'll just go off on a bunch of stories about them.
Well.
Because he's at the heart of the industry. He's right in the middle there. Everybody tells him stuff.
He's out in Canada, right?
Yeah, he lives outside Toronto. Have you ever listened to Bob's Meteorology?
No, I don't think I have.
You can. It's somewhere on Five Body. Maybe if I find the link, maybe we post it. So you might want to hear what Dave created. It's pretty good. 20 years ago.
And he did the Squared one, Bob's Meteorology Squared.
Yeah. And then he did the McCoolin album. He did three albums. And, you could say 22 years ago. He probably finished the first one in late 91. And it was released in April 22nd, 1992.
Wow.
So that was released as an audio cassette and a CD?
Yes. Yeah.
Nice.
By what's his name? By Jerry Boulanger. Dove Entertainment. But he took pictures of the subgenius Dobbs head that's modeled on my father, but it's the property of the Church Subgenius, and he put them in the ads, and all hell broke out. And he was fired, and then Nelson took over and distributed them under the Time Again, he called this company, Time Again Productions.
Why? For putting up a picture?
Beg your pardon?
For putting up the picture that looked like your dad, he got fired?
Yeah, he put that in ads. It's a trademarked image by the Church of Subgenius, and he put it in the ads in various media around the states, and Stang and them saw it, and they tried to sue Nelson. But the Canadian law was different, and he didn't have any money, so it went nowhere. But from that point on, I was blamed for it. And hated, and continued to be hated to extreme, which is, you know, serves me well.
Right. They attack you on that alt Slack form.
Yeah.
What, the Church of the Subgenius, that started in Dallas, Texas?
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. Dallas, huh?
Yeah, two guys, Dallas. Reverend Stang and whatever the other guy's name, I forget his name right now, they would drive around in 78, 79, and the CB, remember CB radio? They would do this, they would rant on CB radio talking about Bob or, what's his name? The other guy's a pretty good ranter. And then they start making up leaflets and a bunch of, weird guys in, a health food store in Little Rock, Arkansas got a hold of it. The pamphlets, and then they start making up cassettes performances and taping themselves, and they sent it to Stang. That's Janer Hyperkleach and those guys, Sterno Docs or something, and they sent their recordings to Stang, and Stang was delighted that somebody had taken the ball and created this humorous recordings, and then they organized a convention, what they called a devival, and they were always satirizing fundamentalist Bible culture. And that was in 81, and then it did one in 82, and so it really got propped up by the Little Rock, Arkansas guys. They really got it going.
Mm-hmm. What about Steve Jackson? You know about this guy, the Illuminati card game?
So no, yeah, that's
like the Bob guy in his mind.
He has a Bob image in there?
Yeah, that's why I wonder if he's got a deal with Stang.
He probably does. I think he does. I've heard about him in relation to them, yeah.
Well, you've never met him.
No. I never met Steve Jackson.
Yeah, seems to be a spider guy, because he's not on like Alex Jones, or like, you don't hear him in interviews or anything.
Right.
Much.
Yeah, and you've got, now we have Alexander 210, who never speaks, out there in Texas. Mr. Alexandy, how come he don't say something?
There's a strange sound going on.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where it's coming from.
That's gone now.
Yeah, it comes from that. Can you hear me? Okay,
yeah.
So there's another odd anonymous that was where the sound was coming from. Well, Daniel, anything else? You save yourself and call back in and be part of the Dave Show.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, it was good. Good to hear you on the Bobfest. So this has been uninterrupted since you started Friday.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5 or 6 days, maybe 8 days. I don't know.
I don't know how you can do.
Well, it's just the RNA drops. Very simple.
Hard RNA drops, exactly.
Drops, remag, ice cream, and oranges.
Right.
So nothing else to report about Adam or anything, right? It's just all obvious.
Adam Vaughn has been he's been around less, but I've sort of been getting a feeling that that's why they've been bringing this guy Denzel Minnan-Wong up. He's like used to be one of Rob Ford's top like allies. And now he was the guy that brought forward the motion that took away his took away the powers or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of why I was thinking, like, that maybe they're building him up so it's just him and Adam Vaughn for like a few elections. You know, if they don't bring in some of these other people like Olivia Chow.
Right. Are they the same party, Adam and this guy, or they don't have parties?
No. They'd be like the exact opposite, but they're pretty much the same guy. Like they're both like seem like a, you know, kind of like a nerdy guy. But like
right.
Denzel Minnan Wong's the right wing and then Adam Wong's the left. But it
right,
pretty
so
much
they're
like,
they're going to be the competition.
Like, that's the nightmare of Toronto. Yeah.
and these guys
for years. That's what I can see.
Do they identify with parties, these guys?
No, but I'd say, you know, it's like Denzel Minnan Wong would be with the Tories, and then Adam Vaughn would be like NDP, you know? So it's like they're opposites, you know?
Yeah. Are you saying two people, Denzel Wong, or is that one person?
Yeah. Denzel Min and Wong, and then Adam Vaughn. Yeah, so he's got, that's where they've got a similar name too. That's why it was like Vaughn versus Wong.
Could be, yeah, right.
Could be a good battle. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it'll be it'll just be like a big cover. That's why Rob Ford at least have the entertainment value. But
well, Neufeld said that Ford could win again because it'll be a split vote between Juan and Vaughn, and then he gets a third, and he will win.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I could see it happen. And then what about Brandon Cross Carey? Look, because I think he might have been one of the guys that's still with Ford. Or have
no,
you
no, he was offered chief of staff. But no increase in pay, $50,000 or so. So he left Ford, and he's working for a guy across the hall, another counselor.
Deputy mayor. Oh, so he's with the deputy mayor. Okay.
Yes.
I wasn't totally sure who switched.
He left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, very good, Daniel. I got to start playing some stuff. We must. The agenda must be completed. So thanks for calling in and reporting. Our reporter on the ground on assignment out there in Toronto.
Yeah, Bob Fest.
Bob Fest. Yeah, Bob Fast and Bob Fest. Bob Fast from WBAI. Okay, is everybody here? Everybody ready? Ready to
ready.
Ready for the wisdom, the treasury of wisdom from Mr. Michael Blake Reed?
Yes.
All right.
So tear it up, Bob.
All right, here we go. Sound volume is proper. This is January 18th, 1995, and this is real. This is very interesting topics. This is the awesome. This session, many topics, many interesting things. I think we're ready.
Greetings, Evergreens.
Greetings, Bob.
I re-listened to the Mysteries of History tape, part one, done approximately in 1977.
Yes.
And I found it enjoyable, and I got more out of it listening to it after all these years, especially after our session in September. And I wanted to get some dates on the various topics covered to pinpoint my sense of history and our evolution. One of the first topics was the Vayanas, I guess mentioned in the Vedics, the Vedic writings. When did the Vayanas fly around in India?
Approximately 4,000 years before this time.
So 2,000 BC.
Yes.
And they were similar flying machines as the Atlanteans had?
I blew it. I forgot to fucking mute you guys. Why didn't you tell me?
All participants are now muted.
Sorry, Ed. We'll just move it back. What was that? 147? We've got to make it a clear thing. Can't have the interruption. A second. 148.
Greetings, Evergreens.
Greetings, Bob.
I re-listened to the Mysteries of History tape, part one, done approximately in 1977.
Yes.
And I found it enjoyable, and I got more out of it listening to it after all these years, especially after our session in September. And I wanted to get some dates on the various topics covered to pinpoint my sense of history and our evolution. One of the first topics was the Vayanas, I guess mentioned in the Vedics. The Vedic writings. When did the Vayanas fly around in India?
Approximately 4,000 years before this time.
So 2,000 BC.
Yes.
And they were similar flying machines as the Atlanteans had?
They were similar in effort, and the technology was essentially the same.
Did they invent it independently of any legacy from the Atlanteans?
Not independently. Certain things were known.
Through Egypt? Did the Indians...
Basically through certain Egyptian, when there were certain other pieces that were known. The concept would have been talked about that, and the technology was sufficient to replicate.
So the Indians did their own particular twist, innovation on the legacy.
Yes.
The legacy coming from the Atlanteans through the Egyptians.
Yes.
But they didn't...
Basically priestly, however, with the Vedics, it was extremely based on a priestly knowledge.
And only an elite had it.
Only a priestly group had this, yes.
So many of the population would see these vehicles but did not understand where they came from.
To a degree, yes. Some knew. But the secrecy associated with this was extremely tight.
Right. So did any of the average, say, peasant population fly in the machine?
No.
Right.
Nor was used for commerce.
Right, so...
It was not even considered for commerce.
But that knowledge disappeared. The Egyptians, when did they last have the flying machines that they had?
Approximately the same time. They were certain that they had built themselves more winged versions, because the energy that was created by the Mercury engine was not great. It offset a certain amount, but in actuality was more of an assist. So the gliding function of a vehicle was as important. But to understand the secrecy surrounding this and the smashing of them, and why they would be smashed, must understand it in a political context also.
So they were smashed by the people who didn't have access to them?
No, they were smashed by the people who had them.
Why?
Because the entire concept of such a vehicle was to transport a man with a message. Because of in a society where travel by road was dangerous and slow, this speeded the communication faster. But it was in a society that was not designed for fast communication. It was designed to be stately. It was designed to be seasonal. It was designed to have rigidities within people and groups. Please. You see? So therefore, that which would come, which would break the rigidity, see it from the Luddite point, and you would see that any advance in a civilization that is not designed to accept such an advance, or is beyond the parameters of advance, becomes unstable, becomes possibly degenerative from the perspective of those that would wish to have a certain inevitable stability to an organization in a country. So the priestly caste itself looked for the Vienna as a means of communication between groups of priests, and between those that would rule in that particular area, though they were not rulers of the country per se. They had a considerable amount of emphasis on what was decided, because they were part of the continuum, you see, the continuum that was created in that society for all of its writings on particular subjects. They were to keep this continuity, and that was the stress that forced the destruction of the few Vyamas that were made. And there were but a handful made.
Less than 10?
Less than 10. In actuality, 6.
Right, now, you indicated it was the priestly class in India. Was it the priestly class in Egypt that had them before, or similar things?
They were, yes, and realize that Egypt was a much more volatile society for it could make changes in 20 years and had to upon occasion. But if you take a good sharp look at a rigid society, you'll see that it inevitably collapses because of its rigidity, but it maintains itself for a consensus of time, sometimes hundreds of years, before it itself dissipates. If it is invaded by an outside force, such as an army, then it will collapse overnight, because the invading army will oftentimes bring in ideas which do not allow for a stable society. So it is not that the Assyrians were a danger, which they were, that the Assyrians attacking the Egyptians would change the society. A conquered society loses everything. Some would say it would withstand, but no, it ends with the conquering. Take a look at history, and you'll see that every time the conqueror comes in, the society changes or ends inevitably quickly. Now, to the priestly class, to the Vedic, to them, the concept of quick messaging was first considered to be useful because it would enable the promulgation of information to maintain stability. But it was also Pandora's box that, if opened, if promulgated, then others would seek that technology. By the seeking of that technology, the society would no longer be. And so therefore, they were smashed. And most of the writings concerning them were destroyed. Some remained.
The Egyptians, when did they develop their flying machines?
Before this, there had been several attempts.
How many years before?
Approximately 1500 before.
Did they smash theirs?
They did not progress. There is a certain aspect to a very primary society that it cannot afford a certain experimentation and, in fact, discourages experimentation.
So how many flying machines did they develop?
Three, four, right. Five. And each one, in a way, was essentially glider form. And that would travel 200, 300, 400 feet.
And how many miles per hour?
Extremely slow, between 25, 30.
And the Vianas were that speed too?
They were that speed too. They were not fast.
Now, did the Egyptians and Indians develop this through understanding resonance and working with resonance?
They understood the aspect of resonance to a degree, but they were basically discovering two factors, a positive and a negative charge, and that was considered to be one of the greater secrets that the Egyptians and the Indians had discovered. That something would have within itself a certain static charge, well, that was understood. But that it could be created. And what was done was basically an acidic mixed with essentially earth and sawdust with an anode and a cathode of dissimilar metals, and from this we were able to create a slight electrical force. Now, with this, they were able to understand what had been passed down to them.
From the Atlanteans?
From the Atlanteans. Those are the Atlanteans who discovered electrical force. They discovered electrical force, and they had understood crystalline force, and they understood resonance. Not fully, but enough. You see, if you take any modern instrument and the diagram of an instrument, the schematic is a very recent development. But if you look at a schematic, you'll find a strange symbol where the lines end that you know means battery. So someone else who does not know what this means, it's a hieroglyphic that has no meaning. They did not have schematics, they had stories. And the stories were the schematics. But when...
Store being battery?
And a story. They would have stories.
Oh, they did not have schematics, they had stories.
And stories.
That's where they had the male-female dialectic.
Yes.
Yes.
Of the male power, the female power, the divine power of the combination. Now that would have one meaning to a person who understood what the male, the female, and the divine power in that combination. Nothing to do with males, nothing to do with females. But they did believe that the weak electrical forces that they had created were an aspect of divinity. It was an aspect of God, not an aspect of science, as you would see it.
Was Isis and Osiris symbols for scientific physical properties?
No, there were that certain scientific things had been understood by followers of them. Then they would attribute the discovery to that particular God. If you would take... an idea. What makes a democratic idea? What makes a republican idea? Depends upon which party you belong to. You see?
Yeah, so the Iris, Isis and Osiris did not relate to this male female physical thing.
No, but the stories that were there did. I understand.
The stories were the stories that were there related to the physics.
It's a race of the physics, which were essentially understanding that if you passed a certain electrical charge through a certain substance and heated it, there would be the production of certain wavelengths that would then affect the inertial mass of an object within a certain area of that field.
You mean like sexual intercourse? That was a metaphor for sex?
No. It was an electrical force through a certain metal that itself would be heated. If you would see that in the description of the Anna, there is a heating part that heats the metal, and there is a battery in which this is passed through.
Okay. The Egyptians, did they destroy their flying machines? Did we already say that?
This once again must be understood into the context of...
Oh, we already talked about how they didn't want to develop it, upset the hierarchy.
To a degree, but any advance in a science was kept within a group. But any advance of a science, particularly in the Egyptian situation, belonged to the ruler. So let's suggest that a stonemason would discover a means of tempering a copper, that he would find that he could keep a sharper edge to his chisel by certain methods, whatever they would be. Well, then it would not belong to him, but it would become a secret of the masons. Now, nothing to do with modern day or even masons beyond this, but they become a secret of the masons and then owned by the king, because the masons were owned by the king. Now, if you would see that those that designed to fly that became the property of the king. There was no property ownership. None. None at all.
No property what? Initiative?
No property owned.
Yeah.
You see, it was a concept. There was later that in Egypt you could own land. In those earlier days, you did not own land. You did not own your own self. Even in the higher castes, they did not own themselves, but were owned by a higher caste. And the ultimate owner was the king. So therefore, all flying equipment would be owned by the king, as were all boats. And that boat that would carry the king across the sun, that would take him following his death to the greater beyond, was his symbol. So therefore, it was owned by the king. But understand that experimentation that is heart and soul of yourself was not there then to be discovered, to be of an interest, but to carry it further, no. Much of this was destroyed. Certain of the smaller things were kept, but none of great value. The Egyptian castes that discovered an electrical potential that they ascribed to their god, they were very careful to bury everything. Understand that in those days, to hide from an authority was to bury it. It was the cheapest, quickest, a most infallible method, was to take your writings of your sect, take the knowledges that you have, copy and place in the ground.
So will we find some of these artifacts in the next century? In the next century?
Yes.
All right. Something I was reminded, wasn't there in the early reading of Evergreens on the difference between Atlantis and Lemuria, the Lemurian sensibility created the essential characteristics of the Eastern Asian civilizations?
Mostly, yes.
As opposed to the Atlantean characteristics influencing Europe and the West,
yes.
We call the West. Was there a difference between India and the Egyptians, Lemuria versus Atlantis, in those two civilizations?
There were some, but not as much. India developed on a somewhat different pathway. The more important point to realize is that the development of the Western thought was different than the Eastern thought, because not because of the Lemurian influence or to the Atlantean, though they affected much, there was much more warlikeness in the East than there was in the West. But the warlikeness was done to maintain a situation, while in the West it was an overthrow. There was much more overthrow in the West, much more maintenance in the East.
That reminds me of the great mathematic, where the emphasis toward balance, the feminine, would be Eastern to maintain, warlike to maintain would be the number two, and the thrust of overthrow would be the number one in the Atlantean West.
Yes.
We could make that cyclical or cycle dialectic for the origins of our civilization.
Exactly.
I see.
Now, if you take this one step further, that China invented paper. Why? Because that there was technologically the capability to produce paper long before this. The paper was itself, once again, a medium of message, because it was one of its first uses, was a medium of message. Now, with this, the ruling class of China and the East, particularly China, said that with this, all people would know what the rules are. And so the rules were based on paper. So paper had, therefore had an ideological value to maintain. So therefore, all that which explained so that the individual would be able to fit within the society with ease was accepted. It was the value of paper was in its maintenance of the society, so therefore it was continued. Now, paper and the use of paper in the West did not have that same, nor did even parallel this. Paper was considered, while a means of communication, was considered itself a tool that could disrupt.
Through thrust.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because if the knowledge of paper was to the individual, then the individual would put on the paper whatever he chose.
Yeah, the male one factor.
Exactly.
All right.
And if you look at the Gutenberg revolution, was because, not because there was a printer, though of course it was, but the paper existed. It was actually paper on which they could print the Gutenberg Bible.
Yes.
Now, understand this, that many were deeply opposed to this, because it would put the Bible in the hands of the common person. So therefore, it was the regulation of paper to those who could use it properly. With the production of the Gutenberg Bible came efforts to regulate the use of paper. You see?
But that didn't happen.
Oh, it did?
Who initiated that? The Vatican?
Those within the priestly class of that period wanted to regulate paper. They were not successful, but their way of maintaining certain printers was to say that if they printed material that was not to the imprimatur of the local parish, that they would be excommunicated, and as excommunicated, they would not be able to trade with others. So see how this was done. Now, if you would see all of this in context, you'll see that a society that wants to maintain a certain continuity of stability, because of its basic precept that continuity is success and unchangingness is success, then invention is threat and invention is to be discouraged. And therefore, that is why there is no further work on the Vienna.
Right. Was Erasmus, I think, when he went to Venice around 1500 and started advocating and publishing books, he was not of the faction that wanted to regulate paper.
Now, why did he want to print books?
I assume at a cliche level he wanted to educate people?
No. He wanted to produce books for those who had the knowledge to read them.
Who already had the knowledge?
Yes.
He wanted to increase the scholarship within the elite.
Yes. So therefore, was accepted. Now to Venice, this is quite acceptable. If you look very carefully at the Gutenberg Revolution, very carefully, you'll see that the books that were produced were there for those who already had the ability to use a book. There were no books in those early days of teaching people how to read.
Who was an individual that impulse came from, or a group of individuals, that the idea of spreading to people how to read? Was that the Protestant Revolution?
That was more into the industrial. In Industrial Revolution.
After steam.
After steam, yes.
Yeah, in just 150 years ago.
Yes. You see, at that time, a person who would use a machine would be oftentimes trained by the person who built the machine, who had drawings to do this. But the instructions of the machine, very quickly it was learned. What would you do about that pump for the mine that would extract the water, which was Stevenson's invention? If the person who knew how to run it was not there, what would you do? And what if the person who was to be an assistant to the person who ran it, who would be there if the person who was going to run it was not there? How would he be taught? So therefore, the rise of the instruction manual.
And that's the beginning of modern education.
If the person cannot read the instruction manual, then there is no continuance of the machine, is there?
I see. All right. That was just the first topic in the Vianas. Now, when were the planes of Nazca? There were two phases of the planes of Nazca. There was a human source of animal shapes or something. Then there was the booties left lines, to sum it up crudely. When were the human shapes made by humans, and when were the booties made their lines, date-wise?
Approximately 6,000 and 7,000 years before the coming of the Nazarene.
When the humans used planes.
Yes. That's once again a very different society. You see, if you take a good look at the Mayan society, they had it made.
They had what made? The shapes?
They had their life made.
Oh, they were successful.
They were successful. They were able to have a city that would maintain 500,000 people. They had terraced growing. They had infrastructure of roads. They had aquifers could tap upon. They could irrigate successfully. Life was good. Now, from a modern concept, when you've seen various television programs where there's something that is called the first directive: do not interfere with the society.
Yes.
But obviously, if you would see that the advanced technology is oftentimes embraced by a society, and one of the first directive in this context means that do not expose them to an advanced technology, because it would alter the direction and thrust of this society to which it is exposed. But what if there's a repudiation of it? What if there's no need for it from the perspective of those that see it? You would see a need for a can opener. Without a can opener, there is no can. But what if there are no cans? Of course, there is no need for a can opener.
Yes.
So if you came to a society and said, look at this marvelous invention, it's a can opener, and they would look at it and say, but we have no use for it. And you would say, but it does marvelous things. It opens cans. You say, we have no cans. We have no need for it. Take your technology. The visitors that came
to the Mayans?
To the Mayans and certain other the in that area.
To the ones who made the shape 6,000 BC?
Yes. To them, what use is your technology? That was the thrust. Now, there is something that has to be taken in context also with this. There were certain things that were apparent about the visitors. Apparent. They were different to look at, different physically, different color than the norm that existed in the area.
What color were they?
They were lighter skinned. They were lighter hair. Now see how this fit, and you'll see that though they had godlike powers, they could make these lines. They needed the lines. They could map an area. There was no need for it, but if this kept them relatively happy, then we can go on with our lives and do that we want to do.
The locals.
Yes. So the locals tolerated the gods.
Who needed these lines?
Who needed the lines for mapping and marking. Now, understand that to the ruling people in the Mayan culture, once again, stability is imperative.
Now, where in 6000 BC, were they considered Mayans?
No.
Right. We're shifting to the Mayan culture.
Yes. When the Spanish came, the myth was that these men were the gods.
They had heard about, because the Mayans did not interact with the Budi.
No.
Right?
Exactly.
And so they'd heard about, this is where we get to the Chronicle of Akakor, which is that hidden legacy of those small tribes in South America had interaction.
Yes.
Who were the ones who descended from the ones who made those human shapes.
Yes.
Now the Mayans knew of those myths.
Yes, indeed they did.
Now they thought they'd met the Budians.
And why they opened the country was because they thought, and realized what the stories told, that those who came from the stars had things that interested them, but not that interested man.
Interested the Mayans, but not the ones before. Mm-hmm. Right.
That those who came from the stars had interests that were not interesting to man.
Oh, so the Mayans had the same problem, same reluctance as, or indifference as the previous.
Exactly.
Tribes.
So therefore, the belief was that these Spaniards, who were light-skinned, light-haired, were going to be concerned with their own measures that had nothing to do with local man.
Right.
So therefore, they were welcomed.
And
because they would have no need for anything that normal society would want.
And so they were greatly confused when the Europeans wanted the gold and the things they had. You know what I mean?
Mm.
The gods wanted something that the humans wouldn't understand why the gods wanted that.
Well, and the confusion was, why would they want it?
Right.
Until they realized it could be a competing culture. And that is when, if you would see, as we said, whenever there is an invasion, a culture will collapse, and the Mayan culture collapsed.
And that was, what was the date of that, when the Mayan culture collapsed?
Approximately through the 1200s.
Isn't that before?
Following the Milazzo. This is a Spanish invasion.
Well, Spanish invasion is in the 1490, Columbus,
1480. Yeah, take a break. We should be having a guest arriving at some point here.
Participants are now muted. All participants are now unmuted.
Isn't that awesome?
That was pretty good. Okay.
Who's saying that's pretty good?